Now, I'm John K. Mann, and we're conducting an interview on the 4th of December at the Choctaw Central School in the principal's office at about 10:30 in the morning. And Mr. Wilson, would you just please say your name?
Dean Wilson.
No problem spelling that, is there? Dean Wilson is ordinarily spelled?
Yes, I have a middle name. But
what's that, just for interest?
Sure. Dean Jim Wilson.
Dean Jim Wilson.
But I don't use the Jim because sort of make it too long. I guess I should, but...
No, that's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a middle initial. I've always used it. I just like it, but I have no reason to. Have you got an Indian name? Or is all is your
no.
entire handle?
No, it's just Dean. And
Wilson.
Wilson, yeah.
How far back's the name Wilson go? I mean, do you know?
No, I don't. Actually, I don't ever ask my old man, that says my daddy. But he had some over there picked it up, I'm asking. Of course, I believe that, if I ever recall, he said that Williamson or something in there, but they changed to Wilson whenever, you know, when people that couldn't pronounce the name right, they usually just picks it up and they say, that's what you are, probably, in the old days, I guess. Because they talk about Williamson, I don't know how that got there, but that's always said Wilson now. But he used to be a Williamson, I think. My grandma, when she was living, she said something about it. I just remember just a little bit about that.
Is your father living?
No, he died about 3 or 4 years, I believe.
Your mother living?
No, she's dead too. She, when I was a little child, I don't recall what she looked like.
See. I guess you told me that yesterday, or
yes,
somebody
sir.
I was talking to
yes,
did.
Sir.
Have you got any old living relatives?
Not old, but not really old. Mm. Well, we got my wife's grandma. She's around 80 years old now, but I don't know how she remembers all these old ways or not.
Well, does she know her birthday? Does she know when she was born?
She says she knows by someone that they used to live back in the hills, I call it, because they said Government Hill, you know. In the community, Red Water community, where the old Red Water, what I'm talking about, that used to live in this Government Hill, where, around there. When I first settled, or something in that line, I don't remember, but that's where she was born. And so she remembers by some other family that they was working with, a sharecrop or something, you know. And so that's what she used to say. I don't know how.
Which one of these communities are you from?
Redwater.
You're Redwater. And how long a drive is it up here for you?
It's about 24, 25 miles.
One way.
Mm-hmm.
Do you come up here every day?
No, I don't. I just came here because they choose me to.
Yeah.
From this community, Redwater.
Are you employed by the tribe?
Yes, sir.
What's your
family education?
I see. And what are you doing that?
Well, actually, we are trainee. We try to train the parents in there, at home, you know. We home visit. In other words, we are home visit. We visit their homes, whether children, the small children, right?
What are you training them to do?
Well, actually, we're trying to teach. In other words, we teach the parents of these children when they was young at home when we visited.
Well, now go ahead. You were saying you go in and train them to...
Well, actually, we go and teach them. We don't train them. We teach them to teach the mother to care for their children. I mean, not care. We teach them to care for them too. But what we mean is that, what I mean is that we go to these homes and try to teach, show the mother how to bring up her children. You know, many times parents don't think much of children, especially in the Choctaw. Because the children, as they grow, they need to learn something, but then they have to, you know, there's a lot of things around the home that they don't realize is educational. You know, it's like a picture on a wall, it's like that picture there. It's the children, when they see this, they only think about it as a picture, but there is an education behind that picture. As you can see, there are several different items there, a material there that you, that could be taught as a book. As for instance, that picture there, it's got a fork, a basket of fruit, or a vegetable, or a wheelbarrow there, loaded with something. In the background, there looks like a church, or a city, or maybe, you know, all this grass that grows around it. All these are educational, but that many parents don't realize that these things are important to children. You know, the picture itself shows itself what kind of a day that is. Must be a cloudy day, because you see some clouds hanging up, you know. And it might be in the noon of the day by watching the shadows, or maybe it's in the evening. So, depending on how the picture shows.
Well, would you, I mean, in the first place, would you encourage them to get up some pictures, for instance?
Oh, well,
they haven't
I would.
Got anything around?
No, you see, the problem is that they can't afford these things.
Yeah.
I'm talking about poverty. People that really are down where there's so many people, children that they can't afford the toys or commercial toys or pictures or all this. But what we're trying to teach them is that they can use their own materials or what they got. There's an egg carton or maybe a cardboard that they could draw on, or maybe paint it.
To give the kids
something to play with. Or make some toys with these things, you see. Mm-hmm. Just around home. It's not a lot of things that could be done that to teach these youngsters.
Mm-hmm.
But many people do not realize that these things.
Well, now, are you a field worker? You actually go into the homes?
Yes, we go into homes and teach. We try to teach them to, maybe they get the idea that eventually they'll start doing the things that we're doing for them, see. And then when as they go along, we gradually move out, and maybe the mothers and parents could teach their own children. While at home. I mean, it's not going to be every day because they have other things to do, see. Whenever they have time. We teach them to do the work whenever they have time to do these things. So, it's best to, you know, let them have their own way. Besides us going into home, invaded their times, maybe they probably have something to do, see. They set their own time. If they want to die at a certain time, we be there at a certain time. So that's the only time she has, usually around 9:30 or maybe in the afternoon. And so it's their own times that they really want it. If they want this program in their home, well, we are there to help them. Yeah. So that's the main problem that we have, you know, as poverty goes.
Well, now if you went into a home like that, and say the woman said, I can see you around 9:30. You try to be there?
Yeah, we try to be there.
And in general, how long would you stay?
Well, it depends on...
The reason I'm curious is because this is something completely out of my experience, you know.
And well, it depends on the children. You know, sometimes we could go in there and the children will play with toys. we bring some toys with to them in the homes. And they play with it to, you know, they usually, you know what, how children is, they just want to run all over the place. So we try to keep him there to really teach him what this is, if this is a car, or if we have a toy car, we show them that it has a wheel, what makes a wheel do. If it's rolling, we'll say it's rolling, here's a light, or here's a head, or here's a... You know, it's a lot of things in the toys itself. People may not realize this, but it is. Inside of this toy, there are things that you see in an automobile, you see. So they have lights, or maybe they have a steering wheel, or maybe... you know, two-seated car or one-seated car, all that is, they don't, we try to teach that it's in there. And the same as an automobile on the outside, they have one, you see.
Well, now you go, like in this case you're talking about with a toy car, you've got a manufactured toy, don't you?
Yes, commercial toys. Yeah.
And you, do you give them to the kids?
Well, we do, we try to give each child, it's not too expensive.
Yeah, they're little toys.
But in the meantime, we try to make him one out of a wood or whatever they have in the house, you see.
And show them while you're making it, they see how you do it?
Yeah.
That's
we try to make anything, it's like this toy, a doll, we brought him a commercial toy, and we, you know, one of them, the children that play with.
Mm-hmm.
And then we show the mother, to teach a child how to make that story. It can be done with cloth and some, you know, paper, waste paper or something like that, you know. Magazine, old magazine, you could stuff it up in a cloth, you know, make it into a doll, cut it into a doll, then sew it together and stuff with a newspaper. There's your doll. And you can put his eyes on it with a button, or you could sew his eye, has an eye, or his nose, mouth, whatever. You know, we sort of, you know, as a teacher, we try to teach him as a, what to make.
How about the father? Does he ever get into this act, or
well,
is he all together working with the mother? Does the father ever have anything to do with this type of education?
Well, he should, but usually father's working, you see, and sometime it'd be in the evening. We'll get there, but the father will be there, but then we usually have no father there, but eventually when the father comes, they should, you know, presume that the mother's supposed to teach him, or may probably, you know, pick up the baby and hold him the way he should, see. Maybe hold him while the mother's doing it. While he's doing this, he should be talking to him and all that. We suggest these things, you see. We don't tell him to do things, we just suggest it, or maybe We show them, you know. We don't try to go in there and try to say, you ought to do this, you ought to do that. We don't do this, you see. But we try to show him, or maybe if she's a lack of, maybe housekeeper, well, probably we could have tell him that there might be, something could be done. You know, why don't you change this dresser on the other side, maybe put the things off, maybe? Making it look better, or maybe some things like this, you see.
Have you ever had to deal with a family where one parent was gone, dead, or left the home,
yes,
or anything?
Yes.
Do you ever have a father who's trying to bring up the children without a mother?
In my community, we don't. I don't. I only work with the mothers, or maybe probably a caretaker, not with fathers, because, well, actually they're working, and then I usually work with the caretakers, but in the meantime, I visit the families during the probably at night, maybe whenever, like their convenience, you see, talk to them about these things.
Do you you work all together in Redwater?
Yes, we have two of us work in Redwater.
Well, how much population you got down there?
Well, I actually run about, I would say about 300.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them is youngsters, I'll say about 150 children, half of them is children.
And is this type of education necessary for a good portion of them?
Well, on this part, I think it is. Of course, as an Indian, as a Choctaw, we don't really have the knowledge whenever these youngsters go to this school. On the first day they're in school, they don't know what's going on. For another reason, that's why we need to learn and do things before we hit the Head Start or kindergarten or first grade. And so we started from 0 to 4 years old, where the 4 years old from the years in Head Start, but they're only learning the difference in colors and all this other things, that the toys that is there to be explained to them. While the kindergarten is starting in the books, reading or writing his own names and stuff like this. So what really, for the Choctaw people, I think this is a good deal that we need to be at home, see, because they really don't know what's going on in school, but whenever, if they're seeing this or recognize it when they hit the school, they know what, automatically know what this is, see. As of now, whenever these kids go to school, they don't know, they're just new environment there where they're just, the things that they've never seen, or maybe one or two. But what we're trying to do is try to show them all the things before we hit the school.
Yeah.
So.
Have you got a school down at Redwater?
Yes, we have.
Is it a one-room school with all the grades in one room?
No, we have a new school built about 5-6 years ago. That have around 8 room school building, cafeteria built in.
Oh, good size. How many teachers?
We have, I'll say about five aid teachers and aides.
Are any of the teachers Indian?
Well, yes, we have one. She teaches 5th and 6th, I believe, somewhere in there.
Why aren't they all Indian?
Actually, they don't have the education, I say. I mean, actually, they have to have a degree. In other words, they couldn't teach. It's just the policy of the BIA. So.
The interns are aides, they're Indian, yeah, I guess, aren't they? They're training?
They're training, yes. But as far as teachers are concerned, the principal, just one is the real Indian there, which teaches.
The principal, a white person?
Yes, he's a white person. He's been there before and he came back again. They don't really know what's in the back of that there.
Mr. Wilson, if you're not sensitive about your age, how old a man are you?
Well, I'm 44. I will be 45 next year, about March 20, no, April 21.
Were you born down there in Redwater?
Yes, I don't really know where I was born. I probably was born here in the hospital.
Oh.
I don't have the birth certificate, I should have get one, but I haven't. But I think I was born here in the hospital here in Ashoka County here.
But you lived there?
I lived there.
Your life down in there?
Yes.
Well, now, did you go to school around here? Have you had some schooling?
Well, I came here 1 year when this old building was still here, you know, when I first started junior high. And I was sent over here by my parents, and my father still living there.
Were you sent over to dormitories? Or?
No, they didn't have no dormitory there.
So you went back and forth every day?
No, they sent us here to some of our, kin folks. And we stayed here with the family over here. And that's where the feeling that they should have a bigger school, or probably a bigger dormitories, I guess, came into the Choctaw mind, that they should have all this. And I guess when they start building these things.
But you went through the lower grade down there at Redwater?
Yes. Up to about sixth grade, and I came here. Actually, the sixth grade, I say, that it used to just pass you through whenever you get so much age, you see.
And went on.
Because I saw you in there. I didn't learn nothing. I'll tell the truth, I didn't learn nothing. Still don't. But, of course, the family wasn't pushing me to get this education. If they really wanted me to be somebody, then they probably could have pushed. But I didn't have the mother, I guess. Was the father always working or doing something? And he don't usually push me. You could go away to school, but probably if I didn't go to school, I had to be doing something at home. You see, so the best place to do is do nothing is to go to school. That was my feeling. So whenever they said to go to school, I go to school. But then, them days, whenever they had something to be done, they pulled me off of school and said, okay, you have to help around the house. Like cutting wood or cutting stone wood or picking cotton or pulling corn and all this goes with the farm, see. And so whenever I didn't feel like working, I'd go to school, you see. So I just, that could be my resting place. In other words, if I stayed home, I could be doing something, you see.
So was your father a sharecropper?
Yes, he was. He was. No, let's see. He probably was when it first started, but when the government moved them from Government Hill, as I said before, about 10 miles, 11 miles west of where we are now, but they set aside this land that they should come out and, you know, start their own farm. And I think the BIA had something to do with that. So they moved down to from Redwater. Old Redwater to the new Redwater.
And then they were on tribal land.
Yes.
Prior to that, though, he was sharecropping somebody's land, I suppose. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes.
Growing what?
Well, usually cotton or corn, something to, you know, get by with. We didn't, as of today, most of these dying out, you know. But I think that's what brought him down to the new Redwood where they set aside for his land that the Indians could move in, you know, whoever wants it.
You have experience in growing cotton and corn? I mean, you know how to chop cotton and so forth?
Yes, sir. Very much so.
You haven't done it, though, I guess, in a while, have you?
No, I haven't. But I know how it's done. Mm-hmm. I worked the crop myself, you know, after my daddy left. But it's not a big crop, you know, just enough to get by.
What would you use for horsepower in those days? A mule or did you have a tractor?
Oh, yes, we have a mule. Mules, what they use.
Are there any mules left around?
No, most all of them got rid of the mules. I don't know what breaks them into that. But I think the jobs that hangs up, I mean, you know, sort of coming out in them days, and that sort of went to work, leave the farmland, pushing these youngsters, keep them from working on a farm with what they'll lose this farm, I guess, experience. Because the old man by itself cannot farm, you know, without the help of the other children. And the BIA wants all the children in the school. When this started, then the farm starts facing out, I believe.
What kind of acreage would your father, for instance, have worked? Do you have any idea?
Well, we had about, I would say, 15 acres.
15?
Cropland, yes, ma'am. Cotton and corn. Had some gardening and some of the beans and stuff.
Could he make a living out of that?
Yes, if they really work at it, I guess they could. Yeah, well, they did. I mean, they lived this long. I don't see them starve to death. So
how many brothers and sisters did you have?
Well, I have four brothers and two sisters, as I remember, but some of them. So that's a good many people. And
are they all living?
No, let's see, I've got one sister and two brothers still living.
Mm-hmm. So, are they older or younger than you?
Well, I got one younger than me, and then I got two of them oldest.
Well, now, was Choctaw your native tongue? Is that the first
yes.
language you spoke?
That's what I've been using all my life.
And when did you first get exposed to English, so you used it?
What was it? I didn't understand.
When did you first start to use English, or when did it first so you had to learn it, or?
When I went to school, when I first went to school.
Well, how old would you have been then?
I would have been around 6 years old, or somewhere along the way.
Did you know any English when you?
No, I didn't.
Was the school conducted in Choctaw?
No.
Conducted in English?
English.
Well, how'd you make out at that?
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, as of today, when the young Choctaws get hit to school, they don't even know the first language of white language.
Is that still true?
Yes, it is in some parts, yes.
So Choctaw is still widely spoken, isn't it?
Yes, sir. And so that's the reason we are, as a working family education, is trying to reach these people to learn them and say yes or no anyway. So that was my problem. I didn't know when an English speaking, when I first got to school, I didn't even know whether it be yes or no. But the older children knows what I'm talking about. Or maybe when I say something, they say, oh, that take over from there, see.
Did you ever get to the place where you had to take a course in English, in the English language? They offer any such thing?
No, they didn't.
What we call grammar and that kind of stuff?
No, we didn't have that. No. What I learned is that as I go along, I picked it up as I go at times.
Now, can you read Choctaw?
No, I couldn't. I couldn't. That's the problem with me. If I don't have met probably in school, probably couldn't, but the people that didn't went, still, they could read a Choctaw, you see. And so, some people can write and talk it. Some of us could, couldn't even, we could talk Choctaw, but we couldn't even read or write, you see. It's different.
You read English pretty handily?
Yes, pretty fairly.
Pick that up in school, huh?
Yeah. I don't really pick up the noun and verbs and all this, but I just barely, just as I said before, I was in school to get out of work, stay away from work. And then no one was pushing me, or the teacher wasn't, I actually wouldn't pay that much attention in the children in that place, of course. If I didn't learn nothing, and still I was, I don't know what if it's a parent or it's a teacher. You see, and it, until recently, and they start pushing the teachers, you know, to really teach these youngsters. As far as when I came to Pearl River, I still didn't know what what they're teaching here when I first came over there. And so, actually, probably I didn't want to learn it, probably. They're much, them days, I guess, they'll learn it the hard way if they didn't go to school. You know, probably was the idea there, I don't know. But actually, I wasn't taught all that hard or, you know, to be in school.
Did you get a little arithmetic along?
Yes, I was pretty good in a little arithmetic. I could, you know, think pretty fairly. But
would you say you thought in Choctaw? I mean, that's the way you
think
of things?
Yes, I thought in Choctaw first and then I thought in English.
You still think crime first in Choctaw?
Yes, I do.
That's the way you frame stuff in
yes,
your mind?
Yes, it's because that's the way I was taught at home. I mean, we are on two sides. We have to lead a we cannot be English, or we cannot be a chocolate. English cannot meddle with it. In other words, I have to, when you talk to me, I have to think in Choctaw and then English. You see, and so that's where my feeling is. As of now, these youngsters today, whenever you talk to them in English, they know exactly what you're talking about. But for me, in them days, I had to think about what these.
You think they also know in Choctaw instantly what you're talking about, or do a lot of these kids have to translate from English into Choctaw?
Well, I believe they translate it. Because actually, whenever you talk at home, you know what you're talking about, and whenever you talk in English, you know what you're talking about. So it's sort of translated. But whenever the English gets so much into you, then you automatically know what you're talking about.
Would there be any of these kids that we're just seeing passing that don't know Choctaw, do you think? Are there any of the young ones that don't know any Choctaw?
Yes, they know some English, but some of these that...
Are there any that don't know Choctaw?
That's right.
There are some.
Yes.
They're growing up without knowing it.
Yes, because of the, they call it the bilingual languages. In other words, the merit has something to do with it. You see, if a Choctaw married a Navajo, then they have to speak English, one English only. And so it'll be English, because they cannot speak Navajo, or Choctaw cannot speak Navajo, and Navajo cannot speak Choctaw. So they use one language, and it'll be English. It's the only thing that, so that's the reason the kids have come up now. Some of them speak only English.
Have you got quite a few people married to other types of Indians?
Yes.
Where do they meet them?
Well, let's say they go to school somewhere.
Boarding school?
Boarding school or somewhere out of state, probably. And then they meet, you know, maybe different tribe or different, people. Non-Indian.
So what about marrying to whites? Have you got any?
Yes, we have several. So these people are speaking in English. The people that's not Choctaw. Choctaw had to wind up speaking English. You know, their kids had to speak English to come up. Even though if they are with the Choctaw children, they speak English, and the Choctaw children speak Choctaw, still, they get along. You know, those are children. They can get along, they can buy with most anything. As for you and me, we probably couldn't get along, because I may know what I'm talking about, but still, you may not understand what I'm trying to say. See the difference?
Well, now, if Choctaw woman marries a white man, and have there been some?
Yes, yeah.
Can they as a family live on the reservation?
Yes, they have.
And vice versa? Can Choctaw man married a white woman, can they live on the reservation? There's no restriction to this.
Well, sort of. I don't know how it is now, but that was a little different there. That if a girl marries a white woman, a white man, she has to be with the white.
She can't bring him back onto the reservation.
Well, she can, but she can't,
She isn't welcome?
No, she is well, he is welcome, but there was something in the governing body that the white man won't have the rights to any tribal affairs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the Indian girl can, while the if a Choctaw marries a white
woman,
then he can be involved with the tribal affair.
He can.
Yes.
But she can't.
She does. No, not the man, anyway. The man, white man, won't be involved with tribal affairs.
No, but if a Choctaw is married to a white woman, she can't be involved either, can she?
Well, she's one of the tribe.
She is?
Yeah.
So it works two different ways.
That's right.
That's interesting.
That's the way the understanding was. But I don't know how it is now. It's been so long since I've been reading up on it. Tribal affairs.
Do you live on the reservation?
Yes, I have.
But you can't own that land, can you?
No.
You got some kind of lease on it?
Yes, I have.
How long a lease?
Well, on a year-to-year basis with all.
And who owns the house? You got
I own my own home.
You own it on that land, but you can't own the land.
That's right. I've been there, I said, 30 years, of course, but still, it couldn't be my own place. I mean, they have a right to, I don't have the right to, you know, do anything on it unless I lease the land.
How much land do you lease?
Well, I lease, let's see, 6, 12 house leasing on, and then a place where plant corn and stuff like this, around 6-7 acres in open land.
Did you build your own house, or how did it get on?
No, the tribal started selling these old houses that was sitting on there, and I just bought them, the one I was living on.
The house was right on the property, yeah. Where you are. Could a son or daughter of yours inherit that house?
Yes, that's what they set there for, of course. For the old saying, if I remember correctly, that the house was there for the family, whoever wants it was there. It's like my daddy was living there when he died, and if the family that's lived on it now should still be his home, and also down the line, unless the whole family moved out and then somebody else had to move in, and then they occupy the house, and then that's their house. See, there's nothing I can do about that because my family moved out. But in other words, we don't own it unless we have, you know, unless we buy it. So, I mean, they start selling it now because of the new house that's coming, that they start building that. So, so that's the housing authority that they have.
Has a tribe got a housing authority? They call it a tribal housing authority?
Yes, uh-huh. But for those that's not been owned, if I own it, then I can do whatever I want to do with this home, see?
Yeah.
Because I done paid for it, and if it's pulled down, the tribe had nothing to do with it. Only thing tribal has something to do with is the lease of the land and how you take care of the land.
Yeah.
And all this. So.
Well, going back to your family counseling, how'd you get started in that?
What was that?
What you do, the family counseling, or as you call it, family education.
Oh, well, actually, I just signed up for an opening, you know. I didn't know what I was getting into until I got to the workshop and then started learning everything. But I had a dealing with youngsters before I ever started this early childhood. I was working with the youth center, delinquent students, when it first opened up here at the Pearl River here, about a half mile down the road there. That's a camp housing there. I mean, not camp housing, but trailer houses. And we moved in there, and then that sort of picked me as one of, you know, counselor for the youngsters. So that's where I started coming back and realized the children, the needs. I didn't realize that this really happened to Indian children when I first started, because when I first got married, my old man said, you bring the woman into this house, you're going to work, feed, clothe. You see, and They tell me, they said, you have to go out and get it. I mean, you bring the food in, you feed it. See, he says that I brought you to this world. I mean, half the time, you probably do the work I want you to do. But as far now, he says he was getting too old, could do nothing, you know, couldn't even farm. But if you start yourself, whatever you want to be, you can have it. And then so that's when I started to think about myself that I have to go out and get it. So before I was married, I was in service, you see. I spent 5 years in service.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
During what? World War or
Korea? Korea, Korea, yes. 52 to 58. And
how'd that happen?
Before that, you know, I was working with another man, farming.
Did you get drafted?
Yes, I got drafted. And I spent 2 years in there, and I liked so much, I spent another 3 years in it. And finally, I just come out and said I'll make my own living, try to, you know, see the other side of the world for a while. But before that, I was working with a non-Indian. He was a farm, you know, raising corn or probably feed. All this stuff, you know, not very much, but I was working with it all the time, on and off, spending money, you know, as a youngster. And so, but when I got drafted, I spent 5 years in the service. After I got out, got married, and then that's when I was told that I was my own. So I started thinking about myself then, and so for the rest of 10, 12 years that I worked, I mean, you know, with that, I had nothing, no dealing with no chocolate people. I was thinking about my family, started trying to, you know, half starving. They say they're half starving, but that, really it's not half starving, it's not starving. If really a man get down and think about himself, his, with his family, try to do to bring up the children of the family, it could be done anyway. But I wasn't looking for no price, you see. I could have worked for $3 a day and still live through it. But as of today, if you make $40, $50 a week, and then that's good. And I used to feel that way about other people, you see. They had these jobs, and while I was making $4 a day, and while they was making about $8 a day, and then people usually get jealous of each other, you know, because of making that much money. But I feel that if he's man enough to get it, I didn't get that much education. He probably got more education. I had to get that much money, you see. So I feel that if I was going to make it, I'm going to have to make it with what I got, you know, what education I had.
Now, I guess what you're telling me in part is that something's different with the kids than what you're describing. Mm-hmm. What is it that's different?
Well, actually, it started at home, most of these things, because at family. Some families don't really get down and talk to these youngsters. And they go their way, whatever they want to do. They can almost overrun you, just like my son. He's 17 years old now. He used to never, when he went to school here in Redwater, he never talked back to her mother, you know. But, and when he come over here and start mingling with other children, a different kind, they come from seven different schools, you see. They get to where they don't really understand what they're saying, but they say some words that you may probably not realize what they say. Whenever the kids gets up there, you probably see, if you do some cussing or something like that, he hear you one. He may not do it at home, but when he come over here, he'll do that. And the kid picked him up from there, you know, back and forth, you see. And so these language, makes him rough, or maybe they tell tales or something. And whenever all these youngsters get together, they could do things. They could even, you know, you're a chicken if you don't do this, you see. And if he don't want to be called chicken, yeah, he's going to do it. And so I think that's where the attitude comes from, my boy.
So what kind of problems result?
Well, he started...
Not with your boy necessarily, but any, you work with delinquents.
Well,
what problems have they got?
Well, delinquent children, well, that's where it started. They went home, probably.
What's wrong with them? What are they doing? What are their crimes or sins?
Well, the crimes are they really leave home. In other words, most of the dealing we have with this delinquent children is that they leave home and not come back.
Who supports them then?
I said,
who supports them? They leave home.
Well,
how they eat?
They got kins, brothers, you know, they stick together.
Go and move in with them?
Yeah.